Hi, welcome to episode 431 of the Fantastic Forecast. I'm Dave Elliott. And you know what I always say? You can never have too many spatulas. Today, Fantastic Four issue 431, or volume 3 number 2, if you will, from February 1998. Be It Ever So Humble, by guest writer Scott Lobdell and guest artist Alan Davis. We start with Johnny Storm and Ben Grimm in trouble. They've been engulfed in some dangerous amorphous blob that threatens to kill them all. But it's not really dangerous. It's just the new mutating couch that Reed has added to the living room. You sit on it and it morphs into the shape of your body. But Reed explains it's not designed to handle two people at once, which is why Ben and Johnny are having such a hard time. Sue is sitting on another one of the new chairs and she informs the team,
"Get Crystal on the phone and see if she'll take my spot on the team again. The Invisible Woman is never leaving her chair."
Franklin sits in one of the other pieces of furniture, and Sue reaches out to touch him, but when the two people touch the furniture, it goes crazy. So all three furniture in the room are going crazy, trapping Sue, Franklin, Johnny, and Ben in a big blob of ill-conceived furniture. Where do they buy this crap? IKEA? Actually, Reed is the one who designed this stuff, and he calls it a failure. Franklin asks, "How can having fun count as a failure?" Ben has a little outburst, saying that he's pissed off that the FF can't go back to their headquarters because the Thunderbolts are living there. Instead, they have to stay in some old warehouse down by the docks. Of course, I'm sure at this very moment, the Thunderbolts are dealing with the likes of the Frightful Four and the Super Skrull attacking their headquarters, while the FF, their only foe, is a set of uncooperative furniture. I'm actually quite an idiot. Last issue, when Ben mentioned the old headquarters, he wasn't talking about the Baxter Building. It's still Four Freedoms Plaza, I think. At least at this point, I don't know. I've never read Thunderbolts. I don't know what's going on with their old building. So Ben and Johnny storm off, no pun intended, and they're saying that the warehouse is a dump and they don't want to spend a single night in the place. I've been apartment hunting in New York City. They're not going to do better than a stinking warehouse, that's for sure. So they get to the door and it opens up and someone enters holding a big bag, asking if this is the new residence of the Fantastic Four. Is it a member of the Frightful Four? No. Is it the Super Skrull? No. It's Willy Lumpkin? No, but close. It's their new male woman. Not male woman like Caitlin. Okay, better not make that kind of joke. But a male woman like a person who delivers mail. Her name is Billy, and she has red hair, so she definitely gets the attention of Ben and Johnny, for sure. They start fighting over who gets to help her out with the mail, bringing all the bags into the warehouse. Next, Reed and Sue are walking around the warehouse with Franklin, when a person who's invisible, like a predator, is looking down at them from atop a bunch of crates, and he sees only their heat signatures, like a predator. But the title of this comic is not Fantastic Four vs. the Predator. Archie Andrews has met the Predators. The Fantastic Four have not yet had that pleasure. Meanwhile, over at Empire State University, we have a little cameo from Spider-Man as he rushes off to his class saying that, I'm late to himself. In an animal research lab, two researchers, two PhD students, are looking at a sick monkey. The girl's worried that the monkey looks sad. And boy, I hate a sad monkey. But the guy tells her not to worry about it because, you know, it's a monkey, and they got work to do. The two of them leave the room, and another monkey locked up in a cage looks at them and says to himself, human fools, soon you will all be dust beneath our paws. No, this isn't a Planet of the Apes movie. The crew of the Enterprise on Star Trek has been to the Planet of the Apes. The Fantastic Four have not yet had that pleasure. Later on, in the Lower East Side, Ben Grimm passes an art store selling some of Alicia's sculptures, and they have a sign that says, "Heroes Reborn." Ben thinks to himself, "Heroes Reborn? What does that mean? It ain't actually like we died or nothing. Leave it to some genius in marketing to come up with an easy handle to describe a traumatic experience." Ooh, how meta. What is Scott Lobdell's beef with Heroes Reborn? Ben thinks to himself that he ought to try and find Alicia, and Johnny flies up behind Ben and says that they should hang out together. And he mentions that he tried to find Lyja the Skrull, but she seems to have vanished. And with her shape-shifting abilities, she could be anyone. Like, maybe, for example, a mail carrier. Nah. As they walk down the street together, Johnny plays a little prank on Ben. He shoots some flame up towards some snow atop a building's sign, and a bunch of snow falls down and buries Ben, and Johnny sticks a carrot on his face and makes him up like a snowman. Ben breaks free and chases Johnny down the street. Back at the warehouse, Reed is putting Franklin to bed, and he says, "Although I lack all the empirical data to make such a statement, I'm relatively certain that I am the happiest man on the planet." Sue is standing seductively nearby, so I bet he's about to become even happier. Reed heads over to Sue, and they hug, and the invisible person from earlier with the heat vision, he's standing nearby, watching. What a perv. But the invisible woman can see something, too. She can see it, and it's an alien calling himself Iconoclast. He tries to attack Sue and Reed with some kind of bioblast, but Sue blocks the shot. Sue then tells Reed to get their son to safety while she fights the bad guy. That's a first. Usually it's the other way around. Sue rams into Iconoclast with a force field and knocks him out the window. Reed and Franklin still can't see who Sue's fighting, but Reed locks Franklin up in the nursery and he heads outside to join the fight. Reed stretches out like a big net, hoping to ensnare the alien, but he misses and lands flat on the ground. Franklin pushes a button that sends out a flare signal to Ben and Johnny to let them know that they need help. Fortunately for them, they're outside and they can see the flare. Funny how it always works out like that. So Reed still can't see Iconoclast. He can't hear him either. So he carries Sue away and asks her if there's anything she can tell him regarding his clearly hostile motivations. Sue mentions that he specifically seemed interested in going after Sue. "Exactly," Reed says, realizing something, just as he starts getting pummeled by Iconoclast. Sue rams him again with a force field, but then he gets up and he runs at Sue and shatters the force field she has around herself. Just then, Ben and Johnny arrive and they see Sue fighting nobody. Reed sees a footprint and asks Johnny to fire his flame in that direction, but the flames do no good. Do they ever? And when Ben tries to clobber him, he misses. Sue ends up leading Iconoclast out over the river on an invisible floor. Once out over the river, she turns it off under his feet, and Iconoclast falls into the water. So he lands with a big splash and an explosion of water. Just like Reed theorized. How did Reed theorize that? Not sure how he figured out that you could deal with the alien like he was the Wicked Witch of the West. A little later, the FF have scanners, and they're trying to find Iconoclast without any luck. Reed says, "Even though we can't see him or detect him, I'm not convinced he's not out there, somewhere, watching." And the issue ends with the heat signatures of the Fantastic Four, because Iconoclast is out there somewhere, and he is watching. And that is the end of that issue. Another story by Scott Lobdell, with a new villain, where the motivation of the villain isn't even explained at all. Who is he? Where is he from? Why is he attacking Sue Richards? These questions will be answered never. That's right, never. Because we will never see this character again. What a terrible job by Scott Lobdell of creating a character that no future FF writer ever wanted to bring back. However, the character does look interesting, as the art by Alan Davis, once again, looks amazing, just like last issue. I enjoyed the issue just for the looking at the fantastic artwork of Alan Davis. It's too bad he was paired up with such a lackluster writer. So that's it for today. It's like a really short episode. Considering the last few episodes have all been, like, kind of long. Maybe I'll just keep going with more Fantastic Four. Welcome to Fantastic Forecast, episode 431, part 2. Fantastic Four Annual, number 28, from 1998. In the Best of Families, by writer Carl Kessel and artist Stuart Immonen. The issue begins at FF headquarters at the Baxter. I mean, at Four Freedoms. Oops, I mean, at the old warehouse by the river. Ben Grimm is stumbling around in the dark, trying to find the refrigerator. He finally succeeds, but attracts the attention of Franklin Richards, who asks him what he's doing. Ben is holding a plate with a large sandwich on it. So I guess Franklin ain't too bright. What does he think he's doing? Ben asks where the Limburger cheese is. A type of cheese I've only seen mentioned in Archie comics. So I know it smells, but I've never seen it in real life. And I love cheese. Franklin points out that his mom keeps it in a fancy green container called the Tesseract Box. That's what Loki was looking for in the first Avengers movie. The Limburger cheese. For realsies. So, with the cheese, Ben completes his sandwich, and the sandwich is like a foot tall. I've seen sandwiches like that in Blondie comic strips and Scooby-Doo cartoons, but never in real life. At this point, during their conversation, Franklin asks how Ben is related, because his parents' names are Richards, Johnny's last name is Storm, and Ben's last name is Grimm. I feel like Franklin should understand all this by now, right? I guess Franklin ain't too bright. Ben explains that Sue was once called Sue Storm before her marriage, but changed her name when she married Reed. And eventually, after Ben gets married, he wants to be called Ben Storm. Okay, I made up that last part. Ben turns around, and his giant sandwich is gone. And Johnny is sitting there, looking rather satisfied with himself. Like, he just ate the entire giant sandwich, in very little time. But he didn't. After Ben tries to punch him, Johnny pulls the sandwich out from behind the gamma wave, which is kind of like a microwave, only if you eat enough Hot Pockets, you turn into a big green monster. Johnny flies off with the sandwich, and Ben chases him down the hall. He loses track of him, and he ends up running into Reed's lab, where Reed is still awake, hard at work on testing his theory of particle power transference. Ben hears a voice that tells him that Johnny's down the hall and to the right. Sue appears. She was in the room, but invisible. Ben leaves the room, and Reed grabs his wife, saying that she makes his heart beat faster than any particle power transference theory ever could. They start to kiss, and then back in the dark hallway, Ben is still looking for Johnny. He heads down the hall, and to the right, he pulls on this, what he thinks is a door handle, to the big metal door, and zap! He gets a big nasty shock that knocks him back on his ass. He wakes up, out on a pier, and it's daytime now, and he looks around, and he doesn't see the warehouse. He thinks maybe it blew up. He looks up and he sees the building, Four Freedoms Plaza, nearby, which I thought was a building in Midtown. Now they're like a block away from the river? Ben thinks to himself that he thought the building was destroyed the last time he saw it. Is it destroyed? What the hell's going on with that building? When it comes to Four Freedoms Plaza Tower, I don't know what's going on. Was it rebuilt with the Thunderbolts living in it? Rebuilt as Four Freedoms Plaza? Or the Baxter Building? Or as Thunderbolts Tower? I don't know. We'll find out. The Human Torch flies in, and he picks up Ben, and Johnny seems happy to see him, like he's been out of town or something. They head back to Four Freedoms Plaza, and through a special window made out of selectively permeable membranes. I don't think this is the first time that Ben has entered a selectively permeable membrane. Johnny tosses Ben on the sofa, and he flames off, revealing that Johnny has a mustache, which is not a good look for him at all. Johnny also looks like he's wearing a toupee, even though he denies it, and he's gotten a little chubby around the middle. They get a message on the monitor from Sue, who also looks a little older, and she's working on a archaeological excavation led by Reed on the surface of Mars, even though no one's wearing a spacesuit. Over with Reed, he also looks older, and he's fussing at a Dr. Jones, the grandson of a particularly undisciplined archaeologist. Sue calls out for Reed, and he heads over to the comlink. Reed asks Ben why he cut his trip to Arizona short. Let me guess. Why would anyone cut a trip to Arizona short? Because it's Arizona. Reed asks, is it time? Ben doesn't know what that means, but he replies that he thinks it's past that time. Reed tells Ben that they'll be home soon. Sue gets back on and mentions the baby. And Ben is like, the baby? Just then, Crystal enters the room, and Johnny picks up his wife, telling her that she shouldn't be on her feet. and puts her on the couch. On the fantastic couch. Ben is surprised to see Crystal in her FF uniform. And married to Johnny. And pregnant? Is he not smart enough to realize he's in another alternate dimension? He just got back from one. Now he's in another. Crystal says that she's not pregnant. Someone else is. And then the adult Franklin Richards enters the room with his wife, an African princess, Princess Zawadi. Franklin is moving to Wakanda. He says that the future ruler of Wakanda must be raised there. Okay. Did T'Challa the Black Panther transition into Princess Zawala in this reality? Now, that is an alternate dimension that would be interesting. Franklin's eyes start to glow, and he says that the vibranium in Wakanda will keep his powers in check, and he calls himself the Zero Man. Hey, that's my nickname. Ben sits in a chair that starts changing shape around him. It's not one of those chairs designed by Reed. It's Johnny's son. He just sat on Johnny's son. It's not the first time he sat on a young man. Ben, not knowing that, throws him up against the wall, and he creates a big hole. Johnny's stepdaughter, Luna, with her hair dyed pink, looks in. She says that her name is Spike, okay? Call her Spike. She also wants to talk to her mother, Crystal. She's mad at her brother for crashing the wall, calling him her big brother. So I guess in this reality, Luna is Johnny's daughter, not his stepdaughter. And she's also mad at Ben Grimm for crashing the wall, saying that she wishes he would just get old and die like everyone else. Ah, man, that girl must have really loved that wall. Johnny tells her to get back to her room and finish her homework. Later, Ben is in the kitchen trying to get something to eat. Franklin has to tell him about the food replicator. He saw something like it on Star Trek, so he asked Reed to come up with one. Ben uses it to fix himself a big, giant sandwich. He says that maybe the future ain't so bad after all. Franklin says that things are very different now since the Fantastic Four started, back in 1961. Ben is like, what? Of course, because of the sliding timescale of the Marvel Universe, at this point in 1998, I'm guessing that the FF didn't start until about 1990 or so. So he's pretty surprised by the date. He heads outside, saying that he needs some air. Sounds like he's not in the future, but in an alternate 1998. This is actually kind of an interesting idea for an alternate universe. What if the Marvel Universe aged in real time? That sounds kind of familiar. I wouldn't be surprised if there was an actual issue of what if like that. So next, Luna is up on the roof with her boyfriend, Ozzy, and she's whining the way teenage girls whine, about how people pay more attention to Uncle Ben than they do to her. Maybe if she also made a delicious rice, people would care. Ozzy suggests they come up with a prank to play on Ben that would teach him a lesson, and teach the whole family a lesson. Spike, likes the idea. Meanwhile, Ben is walking around doing the math on how old he would be if hypothetically, the Fantastic Four had started in 1961. He figures he probably would have been old enough to fight in World War II. How crazy is that? He ends up at Avengers Mansion, and he asks Jarvis what year it is, and Jarvis replies, 1998. I take it you've returned from an excursion through time, sir. I guess when your occupation involves frequent trips through time, what year is it isn't such an unusual question. Jarvis leads Ben to a room where Doctor Strange, Thor, and Wolverine are playing poker. He sits down and joins them, and as they play, they discuss various issues, such as the recent death of Bruce Banner, whose heart gave out while changing into the Hulk. Logan says they must be the lucky ones, since everyone else is getting older and dying. How come Doctor Strange hasn't gotten any older? How come Jarvis is still alive? Thor mentions how Daredevil has retired and is working for Mayor Murdock. I guess in this reality, Matt Murdock has kept his idea secret. Ben asks a question, whatever happened to Alicia Masters? And everyone gets quiet. Thor mentions that she moved to Arizona, where the heat is better for her arthritic hands, and everyone is confused, because wasn't Ben just in Arizona visiting her? Doctor Strange does a scan of Ben and learns that this is a thing from another reality. So Strange is going to do a little more research into this. Ben asks about Spider-Man, and they mention that he's been missing since 1973, the day Gwen Stacy and the Green Goblin died. It is odd that they would remember the name Gwen Stacy. Like, who is she to be remembered by the likes of Thor? So later that night, Ben returns to Four Freedoms Plaza, and he's thinking about how Galactus first showed up in 1966, and Franklin was born in 1968. And he's thinking, none of us four were even born back then. But this is only 1998. Let's say Reed is 40. That means he was born in 1958. I'm guessing that at least Reed and Ben were alive in the 1960s. Ozzy and Luna are hiding around the corner, and Ozzy tosses this round object at Ben, hitting him on the back, and it sticks to him, and it makes him float off the ground. It's like one of the Wizard's anti-gravity discs. So Ben is just floating there upside down, and while he can't move, that whiny sourpuss Luna starts bitching about how no one pays her any enough attention because they're all too busy with Ben. Well, maybe they just like Ben better because he doesn't whine all the time. Oh wait, that can't be it. Ozzy starts talking and mentions how he's now within the FF security systems, and Ben recognizes his voice, and he changes. And we can see the real person, and it's the Wizard. He's not a teenage boy. Luna has terrible taste in men. Next, the Wizard lets in the current version of the Frightful Four, Blastar. I can't picture Blastar taking orders from the Wizard. Quicksand, a female version of Sandman, not the DC version, but the Marvel version. And Hooded Haunt, who looks like Death. Not the DC version, but the Marvel version. So, of course, they plan to take over the building and defeat the Fantastic Four. But Luna, she sneaks over and takes the anti-gravity disc off of Ben's back. And it's clobbering time. So, after hearing the commotion, in comes Johnny Storm, his son, and Franklin. And the fighting goes on for a few pages, and Crystal joins the fight, and eventually, Franklin turns into a living conduit into the Negative Zone. Once again, what are Franklin's powers? A living conduit to the Negative Zone? Oh my goodness. Johnny tells his teammates to hold on as the Frightful Four get sucked into the Negative Zone. Next, an invisible force field appears around Franklin. Actually, it's not appearing. It's just there. Trust me. And Sue has arrived. Franklin puts this, tiara back on his head, which helps control his powers. And the Negative Zone stuff shuts off. And he passes out into the arms of his mother. Just then, Princess Zawadi starts to go into labor, and Johnny says they need to call Dr. Blake. Really? Dr. Blake? Thor is still keeping up that facade in this reality? Things start to calm down, and Ben asks Luna how she's doing, and well, since all this is her fault for dating the Wizard, she feels pretty bad. But Ben says he'll keep her secret. Johnny comes over and tells Luna she handled herself really well and offers her a place on the team while her mother is recovering from her injured ankle. A little later, Franklin comes into the room with Dr. Blake, who is old, and Zawadi and their new baby girl, and they've named her Nyami Susan Richards. That just sounds wrong. Nyami Susan Richards. Reed and Sue are happy about their first grandchild, despite the name, and everyone gathers around. Ben is standing off to the side, feeling left out. And then he says, he's feeling weak, and he collapses on the floor. Ben wakes up, and he's surrounded by Reed, Sue, Johnny, and young Franklin, and everything is back to normal. The explosion earlier happened because Ben wrenched the experimental particle alternator by accident, which must account for his trip to the other reality. Ben starts to tell them about what happened, and Johnny suggests that maybe it was just caused by indigestion from those giant midnight sandwiches. And everyone heads off to bed, leaving Ben wondering, what happened to his giant sandwich? He heads back into the kitchen and finds it, and Franklin joins him again. And he brings up how his mom and dad have the same last name, so they're related. And his mom and Johnny used to have the same name, so they're related. And he has the middle name of Benjamin. So he thinks that means that maybe he and Ben are related. And Ben says, that works for me. And he shares his giant sandwich. And that is the end. the end of the FF annual from 1998. Probably, no, not probably, definitely the best Fantastic Four annual in over 10 years. That's not really saying that much, because they've all been stinkers for a very long time. First of all, the art by Stuart Immonen is quite good. It reminds me a lot of Alan Davis. The story isn't much, other than a what-if type story, but it's an interesting idea. What if the Fantastic Four aged in normal time? One of my favorite things I loved about Marvel's new universe back in the 1980s was the whole aging in normal time. And one of my favorite comics now was A Savage Dragon, where the characters age in normal time, having aged 20 years since the launch of Image Comics. I love that kind of stuff. This story also reminds me of that John Byrne Superman-Batman Generation series, where the two characters age in real time, starting in the 1930s all the way up until they got old. It also reminds me of those Batman stories from the 1950s, where everyone is older. Bruce Wayne is retired, and Dick Grayson is Batman number two, and Bruce's son is like Robin number two. Oh, that stuff is so... I love that kind of stuff. Having said that I like the concept, this particular alternate future is only mildly interesting. Way too much time is spent on mopey Luna, and I'd rather Ben Grimm did a little more exploring of this timeline. The card game with the other superheroes is really the only glimpse we got into the rest of the Marvel Universe and see what that was like. For example, I really wanted to know what Moon Knight was up to. Okay, I just made that up. I don't care about that. Before I go, I have an email from Jason T. of Parts Unknown. Jason writes, I enjoyed your covering Heroes Reborn, and wow, that was pretty bad. Now, I gotta tell you, when FF Volume 3 has Johnny mentioned not finding hide or hair of Elijah, that we see her in the Secret Invasion FF Limited series working in a bookstore, likely in New York City, and Johnny never sees her again. And also, after her resurrection, Frankie Ray works retail in the American Southwest, as discovered in the Fearless Defenders final issue, and with her trying to stay away from being a superhero again. Not sure if you want to use that for the show, but figured it was kind of amusing. Thanks for the email, Jason. I wish I could say I enjoyed Heroes Reborn. I just found it so boring. So boring. I've never read the Secret Invasion FF Limited series, so I suppose I'm going to have to check that out when we get to Secret Invasion. I have to admit, I like Lyja as a character, and I'm really curious about what happened to her. Resurrected Frankie Ray? I didn't even know she was dead. As far as I know, she was still Galactus's herald in the far future in the days of the last Galactus story. If she's working retail in the American Southwest, well, that sucks for her. I suppose I'm going to have to check out the Fearless Defenders to see what happened to her. Okay, I'm just kidding. No way am I reading Fearless Defenders. Was that even a real book? Fearless Defenders? It's not a very catchy name. But if Marvel can publish a book called Uncanny Avengers or Amazing X-Men, why not publish something called Fearless Defenders? I'm still waiting for them to relaunch the Fantastic Four and call it something new like the Fabulous Four or the Fascinating Four or the Favorable Four, Fantabulous Four, or Mark Miller could come back and write the Fantastic Four again and call it the Fascistic Four. Or they can make the team more like the Avengers and call the book The Fantastic 400. I would wager money on that last one. That sounds like something Marvel would do. So that's it for today. If you have any questions about the Fantastic Four, about this podcast, or if you need relationship advice, you can email me at podcastff@gmail.com. You can download other episodes of iTunes and find them all at www.podcastff.podbean.com. So long, kids. This podcast is over. I can't stand the wait in line long, so I built a new machine. It just measures up the distance and then eliminates the folks between. One day I'll construct the satellite and I'll name it after you. 'Cause you are the greatest friend of all, except for when you split my lip in